We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Oh boy, we have a big old show today. And it's Friday.
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Weekend. Partying, partying. Partying, partying. Fun, 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 fun. Looking forward to the weekend.
Rebecca Black, Adam, just kicking off what is going to be a big old podcast.
Not many Friday pods are game day pods.
No. Oh, no.
That's very rare.
The rare Friday game day football season versus conference opponent non-conference game pod.
Against team from down the road that never gets played as frequently as, say, Pittsburgh.
True rivals like Pitt. Carolina Wake Forest coming tonight at 6 o'clock, and we're going to help you get ready. How are we going to do that, you may ask?
How are we going to do that?
Thank you, Adam. We will preview the tussle with the Deeks. We have the basketball schedule, which is good since the season starts in like 6 weeks. They thought it was finally time to put out the schedule.
With a conference game.
Yeah. That has more TBAs than conference opponents, which is hard to do. So we'll go through all that. And, Adam, we're going to talk to Natron Means. Natron Means today. Nate. As his friends, like you and I are,
right.
Call him.
Yeah. That's the centerpiece.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the celestial body around which everything else rotates and revolves.
Natron Means. Really an all-time great for the Tar Heels at the tailback position, is now the running backs coach at Winston-Salem State. Adam and I hit the road. We jaunted over to Winston, just like we have today as you're listening to this, for the Tar Heel Deacons matchup. A couple of weeks ago, we went to go see Natron, talk to him in Bowman Gray Stadium, which, side note, pretty nice stadium for a D2 school. They've got nice facilities. Actually, he talks about that in the conversation. And, man, we had a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to you hearing that conversation.
I would totally go to a Winston-Salem State home game.
Yeah, we talked about that. Well, here's the other thing. Everybody around Winston-Salem State was so nice.
They really were.
So helpful.
Yeah.
So.
I feel like now we're basically members of the squad.
Yeah.
So I think if we went to the game, it would be fun. Unfortunately, their schedule doesn't match up too well with the Tar Heels' schedule.
Mm.
But we're working on that. But most importantly, Natron Means, an interview that was on our interview list.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Boy, I'd sure like to talk to that person list.
And it does.
Checking it off.
Does not disappoint. So that interview coming up in just a little bit. Adam has a five-second challenge today. So I've got to get my mind limbered up and ready to go.
With the short week, I went a little easier.
Oh, okay.
I felt like it would be better to maybe throw you a change up high.
Yep.
On this short week, because I know that your brain's been scrambled.
I understand. I appreciate that. So let's start with Wake Forest and the matchup tonight. Before we do that, I'd like, Adam, for you to fire up that tinkling music. The pod's brought to you by the Pinehurst Resort. You can experience the cradle. Do you know how many yards the cradle is, Adam?
4 million.
789. We're going to have a 789-second challenge.
So I was slightly over then.
789-yard short course that the Golf Channel calls the most fun 10 acres in all of golf. Visit Pinehurst.com and plan your next golf getaway. So after the Tar Heels play tonight, you'll have some time this weekend maybe to play a little golf down at Pinehurst. And Adam, couple things about this game. Number one, I don't like playing on Fridays. I don't think the Tar Heels like playing on – well, I know the Tar Heels don't like playing on Fridays. If I had to guess, I would guess Wake Forest doesn't like playing on Fridays.
Even though all their games are on Fridays.
Yes, although every game Wake has played so far this year has been on Friday.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense.
I think they might be in the Cap 7.
Unless they're just big Rebecca Black fans or they're hoping to bring home the 3AA state title this year. So – Fridays are for high school football, and some places that might not matter, but I do think it matters in the state of North Carolina. And so even a road out-of-state game on a Friday, like if Carolina played Pitt on a Friday, okay. I wouldn't love it, but okay. But I just think having a game in the state of North Carolina on a Friday is not the way to go.
And that area –
yes.
Has really good high school football. You've got your Mount Tabers and your Winston-Salem Carvers and your Greensboro Dudley and Page.
Yeah.
All these teams. And that I can't imagine that Carolina at Wake Forest is not going to take some people away from those games. And Mac Brown has said that every time he's talked about this game, that his first choice, Jones, would be for you to go support your high school team as you normally do. If you're not someone who does that, then come watch the Tar Heels in Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
At Grove Stadium. It's not called that anymore.
No, it isn't.
But I call it that.
In your heart.
Yeah.
So, again, it's all dictated by television, and that's when this game was scheduled, and so that's when the Tar Heels will play it.
If Carolina wins, we'll love Friday games.
Ah, Fridays.
Should play them all on Friday.
So, having said that, Wake Forest is 2-0, just like the Tar Heels are. Dave Clawson's done a good job at Wake. He was they were under 500 his first couple of years. They have advanced to the point now where they have been an above 500 team here the last couple of years. And they've gone to a bowl three straight years. They've won three straight bowl games. First time in school history they've done that. They have an opportunity to go to a fourth straight bowl this year, which would be the first time in Wake Forest history that they've done that. So it's a team that clearly is better than it was the last time the Tar Heels saw them, which was 2015 in Keenan Stadium. Carolina won that game 50-14. Wake can really move the ball. They have more than 500 yards of offense in their first two games. Jamie Newman is the quarterback, an older player but young as far as his game experience. He's a redshirt junior, but he didn't become the starter until late last year when Sam Hartman, who was their starter and who is now their backup at quarterback, got hurt late in the season, and so Newman took over for the final three games of the regular season, the bowl game, and the first two games this year, and he's 5-1 as a starting quarterback. So he's done very well. He leads the ACC in total offense through 2 weeks. He is top 10 in the nation in that category. They have two really big wide receivers. Sage Thrach has his brother, is 6'3". He was the ACC receiver of the week the first week of the year. Scotty Washington on the other side is 6'5". He was the ACC receiver of the week in the second week of the season. They have a good run game as well. Kearney is their running back. He's like a little power ball fullback who's a running back and just goes so hard. He's 5'11", 220 or something, and it's just a hard runner, hard to tackle, very physical. They have a young running back, too. His last name's Walker, who ripped off a 96-yard touchdown last week against Rice, longest touchdown run in Wake Forest history. I say all of this to tell you that they can really move the ball, get yards, get points. Now, they have struggled on the other side of the ball to slow the opposition down. Rice only scored 21 points, but they had 14 before their starting quarterback was severely injured in the game, and their backup quarterback did not have the same level of success. Utah State, who has a very good quarterback and a good offensive team, did have a lot of yards and points. So, Adam, it's a team that will badly want to beat Carolina. It's a team that is a quality team that's very good, particularly on offense. And it's going to take and it's a team that doesn't have a lot of turnovers or penalties. Just one turnover on the year. They're in the top 15 or 20 in the nation as far as fewest penalties. So a team that doesn't beat itself, that has some talent, that's 2-0, and that really wants to beat Carolina. All mix it all together, and it's a challenge for sure.
Yeah, I think because Carolina and Wake haven't played very often lately, you lose that familiarity with what they are. And I think there's a tendency to picture Wake Forest as, oh, that's a team Carolina should beat handily, as you just said, last trip, 50-14. And Mac Brown lost his first two to Wake, then won the next eight. I think his first Carolina team gave up 42 their first trip to Winston-Salem, and then gave up 47 all the rest of the trips to Winston-Salem put together.
Wow.
So
what a stat.
He figured it out.
Yeah.
And Carolina really dominated Wake when he was here after those first two. And that second loss was one of the turning points of that regime. But current modern-day Wake is frustrating to play against because they do it all right to the best of their ability, as you just said. They don't commit penalties. Well, Carolina only had one penalty against Miami. They're probably going to have to do that again. They don't turn the ball over. I think they're plus three in turnovers or more than that maybe. So they're not going to give you any gifts. You're never going to have a short field to go on. And they're just going to be fundamentally sound. They're not going to overwhelm you athletically, but they're not going to hurt themselves. So you're going to have to win the game. They're not going to lose it. And I think this game is going to be tougher than people think it is because people just don't know Wake football because Carolina never sees them.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have that frame of reference of the last couple seasons. Oh, I remember they've got this and that. Kearney didn't play in the last game, but he's going to be back, it sounds like. And looks like he's a good running back who, of course, sounds like he might have had some affinity for Carolina, of course, and got offered late, but, of course, chose to go to Wake. So defensively, I think, is the question mark, and especially stopping the pass. And if the same Sam Howell that was there against Miami shows up in Winston-Salem, you could be looking at a shootout.
I think, too, for Carolina, and you heard Mac Brown talk about this on the last podcast in his press conference. Adam and I did not talk about it because we didn't know when we recorded. Told you we recorded a little earlier last week. You know, the loss of Renee at corner is a big deal. I mean, he's one of your two best corners. He and Trey Morrison, I think, are the most proven ones right now at that spot. And he's big. I mean, he's 6'2", 6'3", whereas most corners are in that 5'10", to 6-foot range. He had 2 or 3 inches on that, which is a big deal when you're going against bigger receivers. And so to lose that experience, to lose that talent, to lose that size at that position, I do think hurts. And so Greg Ross, who has been better in these first couple of games and is a more confident player, I think, right now than he was last year, is going to be thrust into that starting lineup along with Trey Morrison. And then after that, you're looking at two true freshmen backing those two guys up in Storm Duck and Egbuna. I was going to get it right eventually there. I think that's going to be tough for the Tar Heels if they do have to go a little bit deeper at that cornerback spot, that they are going to have to go to some youth, and you're just missing a leader on that side of the ball. And then you flip it around, and Nick Polino being out for Carolina offensively, indefinitely with an injury. You know, that is painful as well, because you're missing a guy who is a veteran player, was a full-time starter last year, and Obi Egbuna, by the way, Adam, not Ebi Ogbuna. I got it all messed up. Obi Egbuna. And so without Polino, you're missing a guy who's a veteran player, who's seen a lot of different things, and who's going to touch the football every single play because he's the center. And so Brian Anderson, who I think is a good player, but just doesn't have that bank of experience that Nick Polino does. So I do think both those injuries, of course they are. I mean, they're senior starters. They're impactful injuries to the Tar Heels.
Especially against Wake, whose best two receivers are in the 6'3 to 6'5 range.
Yeah.
That's going to be a problem in the red zone. We saw Carolina try to do that last weekend to Miami. Wake Forest is probably going to try to do that to Carolina this weekend.
Friday night means a shorter week for the Tar Heels as well, so they have not had a day off. They will have it on Saturday. That's when they'll make it up, of course. But Carolina quickly turned around, had a Tuesday type of practice on Monday, a Wednesday type of practice on Tuesday, and so on, as they have prepared to get ready for the Demon Deacons. And so we'll see. You know, first non-conference matchup between these two. And again, this is a non-conference game. We're not just wrong when we say that. I know some people feel that way. We understand that Wake Forest is in the Atlantic Coast Conference, and so are the Tar Heels. And yes, they are in separate divisions, but still in the same conference. But this is not a conference game. They just felt like they had not played each other enough, as Adam was referencing earlier. So they signed a home and home. Wake will come to Chapel Hill in 2021, and that'll be a non-conference game too. So,
and if you're asking yourself, why would you do that? Think, this coming weekend, would you rather Carolina be playing Wake or playing Kansas or someone like that? I'd rather play Wake. You probably get to go to the game. It's a team you've heard of and have some familiarity with versus picking some other random Power 5 team.
Right. So Carolina Wake Forest, 6 o'clock. We will be on the air at 5 p.m. this evening for the Reese Jewelers pregame show leading up to the Heels and the Deeks. First time ever, Adam, ever, that these two have met as undefeated teams this far into the season. Only week 3.
Wow.
But first time ever that they've both been undefeated this deep into a season to play one another.
Only fitting to do it as a non-conference game in that case.
Makes sense. These two played the first game ever in the state of North Carolina. 1888. A 6-4 Wake Forest win.
I was there.
Yep. Adam was just a pup back then. But so, a lot of history in this rivalry for sure, and they'll get it going again tonight, so we'll see.
It's fun to be excited about Carolina football again. People are fired up about some Tar Heel football.
Yes, they are.
Duke game, sold out.
Sold out, Duke game, App and Clemson already sold out.
App student tickets went gone in less than a half hour.
Yep.
7,000 student tickets gone.
The Virginia game is getting closer to a sellout
as
well.
That could be a big game.
Yeah, it could be. Virginia's a very, very solid team this year, and they have a couple nice wins, most notably at Pitt, so to start the year off, so big win for them. So Carolina will play them a little bit later in the year, but another big one. And Mercer's the other game. That is senior day. You can understand Mercer, the tickets for that one have not gone as quickly, but they are moving for that game. And so should be just terrific atmospheres in Keenan Stadium as we move through the year. The App game time, 3:30. So that'll be a good atmosphere again. Afternoon kick. A lot of fun in Chapel Hill coming up.
We've gotten a couple of questions about, do we secretly know the game time of the Clemson game, but we're not telling anyone? No, the first time we could possibly find out, or anyone could possibly find out, would be this coming Monday. If they announce it on the regular schedule, it could be Monday, but just prepare yourself. It could get the 6-day hold.
That feels like a 6-day hold.
It feels like a 6-day hold, so just get it in your mind.
All right, before we go to our interview with
Nate
Means, let me remind you about the Roy Williams Fast Break against Cancer that is coming up on September 27th in the Smith Center. The event benefits UNC Lineberger. It is Coach Williams' big charitable event through the year. And Guest speaker this year, Coach Chad Holbrook, former player at Carolina, longtime assistant on the baseball team at Carolina, former head coach at South Carolina, now the head man at College of Charleston. His wife, Jennifer, will speak as well. She worked in the basketball office for a long time when Coach Holbrook was here at UNC, and they have dealt with cancer in their family's life. Their son had cancer when he was younger, and so they'll be the keynote speakers this year. The website to learn more, unclineberger.org/fastbreak. You can also call 919-966-5905. 919-966-5905. 919-966-5905. Even if you can't make it, which we hope you will, there is an online auction, and you can bid even though you don't attend the event. Adam, anything but else that you need to get off your chest before we talk to Natron? Don't call me refried means.
I don't think so, other than I suggest if you are not of the age that you saw Natron run the football for the Tar Heels,
yeah,
you should queue up YouTube.com and you should look up
www.http://
you should look up some Means videos at Carolina so you'll understand some of the things he's talking about, because he gives you some stories that if you know the principles involved, these are awesome stories.
Yeah.
But if you don't immediately get a picture of him running the football in your mind when you hear his name, you need to watch that in action before you hear these words.
Former Tar Heel great, had a long and successful professional career as well, including a Super Bowl appearance with the then San Diego Chargers, and now an assistant coach and associate head coach at Winston-Salem State. Here's our interview with Natron Means.
We are fired up for this interview.
Yes.
Jeff. If I'm not mistaken, I believe back around June, someone asked us who are the people we most want to interview.
Yeah.
We talked about this on the podcast.
Yes, we did.
And we said Michael Jordan.
Yep.
I don't remember who else we said. And then we said, in football, Natron Means.
Yeah.
He's the guy we want to talk to because he was our guy when we were watching the Tar Heels.
Yep.
And I still believe if the Tar Heels were on the one-yard line in the championship game and needed a touchdown to win the game.
We're talking about one-yard line, but on the 50-yard line if you want to.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you. I was waiting on my cue.
And you could only give the ball to one Tar Heel.
Yeah.
You give it to Natron Means.
Yeah, man.
So we really appreciate you giving us some time.
Hey, man, thank you. I appreciate you guys having me on. Hopefully I can live up to the hype of that intro. you said Michael Jordan, Natron Means.
Yeah.
Usually those things don't land in the same sentence too often.
No way. We're excited.
If you were in the right era, they do.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay. Let's rock with it.
So, Natron, when we walked in, and we are here in Winston-Salem, at Winston-Salem State. We are at Bowman Gray Stadium. And I said, we're here to see Natron. And he said, let me go see if Natron is here yet. So, first of all, before we do anything else,
correct.
My whole life I've said Natron. Correct. Is it Natron?
It is Natron.
Oh, my.
What?
I've been wrong my whole life.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it is Natron, but it's a phonetically incorrect thing. But everybody calls me Nate.
Okay.
Everybody calls me Nate. So.
All right. Are we boys enough now that we can call you Nate?
I don't harp on it. Feel free, call me Nate.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So Nate, let me ask you, how they tell Tar Heel fans what you're doing now and what's going on in your life.
Okay. So currently I'm the running backs coach at associate head coach at Winston-Salem State. I've been here. This will be the start of my sixth season right now. So still coaching, still involved in the game. I'm a father, married 20 years. Let me make sure I get them all right. I have a 22-year-old daughter, Taylor, who's in San Diego, California. I have a 19-year-old daughter, Kaya, who somehow, I'm still trying to figure this out, ended up at the University of South Carolina.
Oh, boy.
I have a 16-year-old daughter, Asha, who we are proud to say is a soccer commit, Chapel Hill. She's already already signed, sealed, and delivered. And I have a 12-year-old son, Nari, who we are raising the right way, and he'll be a Tar Heel soon.
There you go. So tell us about your coaching life and why this is something that you've chosen to do.
It took me a while to get to this place. I think after I retired from football, I struggled to find my place. I had some opportunities before I retired to actually coach. But at the time, I just didn't think it was for me. I never saw myself as a coach, putting in long hours and things of that nature. You know, I was used to, once football was over, you know, hey, I was away from the building, I was out, I was doing my own thing, and football was just too many hours, too much time for me. But, you know, after I got out of football, people talk about the transition. Dealing with the transition was something that was real for me. I really feel like I sat in one place for 10 years. That's just kind of how I felt. But I was always involved in football, whether it was youth football. I started a youth association when I retired. Pop Warner football, I did that for 3 or 4 years. That was great, going out and coaching the kids. It kept me involved. It kept me around it. But, it gets to a point where youth football can only stoke the fire so much.
Sure.
Can only stoke the fire so much. So a buddy of mine, Robert Massey, got a job up at Livingstone, and he called me up there. So I went up there. I coached with him, and that kind of got the ball rolling. So I did that for some years. Then eventually it was only part-time. It was only part-time because at that time I did not have my degree. And my wife, you know, she wasn't jiving part-time, you know, part-time pay with full-time hours.
Boat.
Yeah. So I had to leave Coach Massey, and I had a son. You know, that's when my son was born, and I did some high school coaching. And then Chris Keldorf reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to come and work on the Nike circuit with some stuff that he was doing. So that kind of kept my football fix going for a while, doing the Nike stuff, doing some personal running back training, working high school from here to there. I went back to my high school, Central Cabarrus High School in Concord. I went back to my high school. They had a head coaching job available. And I tried to get the head coaching job in my high school. I did not get the job. And they told me that I did not get the job because I did not have my college degree. So I was like, okay, well, you know what? I had always told my mother that I was going to finish. So, no better time than the present. So I went back to school, knocked out the degree, got back into coaching, told myself, in 2 years I'd like to be coaching college ball somewhere. Coach Bulwer, Perez Bulwer, a former teammate of mine at Chapel Hill, was the head coach here at Winston at the time. I called him up. I just told him I wanted to get back into coaching. I wanted to get back into it full time. And, ever since then, that's what I've been doing, sitting here coaching full time, trying to make a living in this thing.
What do you like about it? What do you like about coaching?
I enjoy being around the game first and foremost. I enjoy being able to, significantly, positively impact the lives of the guys who I coach. Having these guys in my room, being able to share my experiences, share my stories, the good and the bad, to hopefully help these guys, no matter what they do, come out of here and be better off because of their time with me, so they can go back to wherever they're from or wherever their career or life paths take them, and they can be positive, productive citizens in their community who are always going to cherish their time here, love this university, and give back to Winston-Salem State.
So you obviously played at a very high level in college. You've been to the highest level in the pros. What are some of the challenges that are unique to a place like Winston-Salem State? Obviously, the game itself is the same. But what are some challenges that you guys face here that maybe aren't faced at Carolina or somewhere like that?
Where do you want me to start? where do you want me to start? Long bus rides, support staff. I would say the biggest hit is felt in the support staff, right, and the lack of support staff. I do believe that our academic support staff here does an amazing job with our guys, but there are so many other areas where, just based on lack of resources, that, our guys are going to fall short. I would love to be able to give these guys all of the perks and things that we got when we were at Chapel Hill, just to be able to walk around with your UNC football gear on.
Sure.
And not just one shirt, but multiple shirts, to be able to fly to games or to be able to have victory meals like we would have in Chapel Hill, lobsters and steak after you win. Top-notch luxury facilities and for a D2 program, Winston-Salem State has top-of-the-notch, top-line facilities. I think we fare better than most in the country. If I could change anything, and I've said it often, is that we ask so much of our student athletes here, but man, we don't give them their fair share, what they deserve, because these kids work hard. That's a common denominator. You know, these kids work hard. These kids want to win. These kids want to succeed. These kids want all the things that the big boys want. Coming from a D2, you know, those are realistic goals and realistic opportunities for these kids to have. But we also know what the numbers say. You know, we also know what the numbers say. So for me, again, if I could do anything, it would be to give these guys what they rightly deserve.
Do the kids in that running back room, do they know you as Coach Means, or do they know your pro bowler, 1,000-yard rusher, played in the Super Bowl Means?
They all obviously start off knowing me as Coach Means. And at some point during the year, you know, somehow, some way, somebody will say, hey, Coach Means, you know, I saw your video. You know, I heard somebody talk about you there, talk about you. Now, sometimes there'll be a guy who will come in, you know, and I'll tell them, let me see your – I looked at your recruiting video. You know, I looked at your highlight video, but, you know, mine's better.
You know? Let's just be real
about
it.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I will throw that out there. I will throw that out there. You know, well, let's compare highlight videos. You know, let's see what you're – you know, let's see what you're twerking with. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I like to rip them. But the kids get it. They understand. Yeah, they understand.
What's your go-to highlight? If you can only show a kid one thing, like, to make you understand – Your coach is a bad man. What do you show him?
One clip. Show him one clip.
Come on, man. There's so many to choose from.
I know.
College or pro? Just like
whatever
one clip.
You like.
Probably the touchdown run against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was like a 4th-and-1. We ran like a counter coming back to the right. You know, downhill, 8-gap, bounce it outside, break a couple tackles. Bounce off a few DBs, stretch the ball out, touchdown, stand up, try and high five the official. You know, I was all in the moment there. Yeah, I was all in the moment.
What? Let's start. I want to go back to Carolina first.
Okay.
What was your reaction, first of all, here recently when you heard Mac Brown was coming back and was going to be the head coach of the Tar Heels?
Oh man, ecstatic, off the charts. Couldn't believe it. Excitement. I mean, it took me back to my time in Chapel Hill with Coach Brown on the sideline. Thought about all the success that we had, all the in-state guys that we recruited. All those things come back, you know. All those things come back.
As a coach in the state currently, I'm sure you talk to other coaches, high school coaches. What has the reaction been from them with him returning?
I think they recognize the presence. I think that's the biggest thing, is that for so long it's, where you guys been? You know, where have you guys been? And understanding that every guy is going to have, every head coach is going to have his philosophy of, you know, what works for him in terms of recruiting. But, you know, I've said it for years, based on my experience, Coach Brown has laid the blueprint on how you win, you know, on how you win. And that starts with recruiting. That starts with recruiting. You know, we have to protect this backyard. You know, we have to be – the big guys are going to obviously come in and get what they get. You know, Clemson, hey, Alabama, hey, we understand that. But when it comes to other programs, other Power Fives, whatever it may be, in-state guys, you know, especially the in-state guys, you know, we've got to beat State in recruiting. We've got to beat Duke in recruiting. We've got to beat Wake in recruiting. And for the past couple of years, you know, we hadn't been doing that.
Yeah.
You know, we hadn't been doing that. So that's what I hear, you know, and that's what I see. They talk about the presence, and you see the coaches. When I'm in Charlotte and I'm out about it, and I'm in my area, hey, the guys from Carolina were just in here. The guys from Carolina were just in here. And that wasn't always the case.
I know you got a chance to visit with Coach Brown in Chapel Hill a little bit this summer.
Mm-hmm.
How does 2019 Mac Brown remind you of 1990 Mac Brown?
2019 Mac Brown's a little bit more gray, right? he doesn't bounce around as much as he used to. You know, he's more serene. He's not as you know, Coach Brown. I just remember you could always hear him. He didn't have a loud booming voice, but you'd always hear him. So a more seasoned Coach Brown, a guy who's ready to get our program to where it needs to be.
I think maybe more than any other player, people who followed Carolina in the 90s associate you and maybe Jason Stanisek with the Tar Heels turning that corner under Mac Brown. Just from your recollection, what were those years like trying to go from obviously a team that had not been very good to one that was getting there?
For me, I guess it would all probably start like on the recruiting trail, right? Because as your high school juniors and seniors and you're going around and you're making these trips, you're seeing a lot of the same guys. You know, you're seeing a lot of the same guys. Now, for me, I was probably the I was the easiest recruit Mac Brown probably ever had because, you know, I knew from an early age that if given the opportunity, you know, I was going to play football at Chapel Hill, that there was no doubt in my mind. So when I used to go up and, you know, watch the games, and I remember more than one recruiting trip, me, Mike Thomas, and Oscar going to football games and going to basketball games and just sitting there talking about, you know, what it would be like to come here. Obviously, understanding that we would have an opportunity to play because of the 1 in 10s.
Yeah.
You know, 1 in 10s, like coming here, you know, we're going to have a chance to play. So, you know, as that conversation is being had and we start to play in all-star games and guys start to commit and you see kind of everything coming together and then we come in, I remember my freshman class, it was me and Jimmy Hitchcock, Mike Morton and Bernardo Harris, Ray Jacobs and Malcolm Marshall, Mason.
Pretty decent class.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got William Henderson.
Oh, yeah.
You got a lot of guys there who came in and had a chance to make an impact and went on, obviously, to have good careers there. And you know, some of us were fortunate enough to play Sunday ball. But I remember being in high school, and there was a list that came out of the top 50 players, and it ranked the top 50 players in the state. Like half of us went to Chapel Hill. Like of the top 50 players in the state, half of us ended up at Chapel Hill that year. And when we got in, and I think because we had really gotten to know each other before we had gotten to college, when we got in, our class was just, you know, so different than the guys who were there before us. We were rambunctious. We were crazy. I mean, we were in everything. You ask, I mean, I'll tell you, we were all over the place. And you know, there were some guys who ended up not finishing that journey with us, but were definitely as much a part of it as the guys who were fortunate enough to make it all the way through. So, you know, when we came in, you know, we just kind of had a mindset that we were just almost like rebels, like Coach Tootin. You know, Coach Tootin wasn't going to break us. The strength coach wasn't going to break us. You know, we were loud and, you know, we would, you know, we acted out. We felt like we were ready. You know, like, why y'all holding us back? Turn us loose. Like, we can play. And eventually, when we got our chance, we were able to take advantage of it. So it was good in that sense because those are lifelong friendships, right? Those are the kind that, you know, you never forget. You know, yeah. that will always be with you. You know, people ask me all the time, where do the bulk of your friends come from? It's like NFL guys, it's like college guys, it's like, you know, NFL locker rooms, you know, really aren't conducive to long-term relationships. You know, guys get gone, you know, guys get cut. And in college, guys get gone as well. But you go through a process in your life where, you know, you're becoming men together. You know, you're becoming men together. And that's a bond that we had. Guys tell me all the time that some of my buddies who played at other places that they don't see, they're not as close with their college teammates as we were. And that's special. You know what I'm saying? That's special, definitely.
I was going to ask you something else, but now I got to know this. So what's the most repeatable, crazy story from that group that you can tell on the podcast that when you think about it, you just think, man, I can't believe we did that, but it sure was fun.
So we went to the Peach Bowl.
I wish you could see the smile on Nate's face as he's remembering.
Nah,
this
story. I won't go in much detail. You know, and I'll just say this: when we went to the Peach Bowl
after the '92 season.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we went to the Peach Bowl after '92 season, and you know, we were downtown, heart of Atlanta. You could walk to any trouble you wanted to find, and you know, we would have, you know, curfew at 11 o'clock. You know, 11 o'clock, and you know, you could just stand at your window. You could just stand at your window and just watch the race. Just watch the race. Guy, Carolina Blue coming from everywhere. Guys just running, sprinting, hauling, trying to get back to that hotel by 11 o'clock. I'll just leave it at that. I won't go any further. I won't say any names. You know, but that Peach Bowl in Atlanta was a great way to end my college career.
I understand more about the first half of that game now.
Yeah, that's right.
It makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
Is there's so many, at least again, for people who I think followed Carolina during that time, you know, the game you had against Wake Forest, there was a big game against Maryland, there was a big game against Duke. I mean, are there, what memories on the field are ones that you hold dear to you now?
Those three are big. Definitely probably the biggest, the first one being the Wake Forest game, because I guess like most freshmen who are wild and rebels and want to prove their worth, I had I had a time in college where I couldn't get out of my own way, where I couldn't get out of my own way as a freshman. Like, you know, no disrespect to the guys who were there before me, but, you know, when I was coming in on my recruiting trips, you know, I'm watching, you know what I'm saying? I'm watching the tape. Again, I grew up, like, diehard Kellon. I used to watch the Dick Crum football show on Sundays, and got to a point where, you know, I'd have to go to church. Like, you got to go to church. So what I would do was I would ask my mom if I could spend the night at my grandmother's house. And she said, yeah. So I'd leave my church shoes at home. And then I get to my grandmother's house, right? And it's time to go to church. Well, I don't have my shoes. She's like, okay, well, she'd leave me at home. Well, then she'd leave me at home, and I'd stay home and I'd watch Dick Crum show. So I'm, you know, William Hughes, Tyrone Anthony, you know, Kevin Bryant. You know what I'm saying? This is like my plan. I don't know how old I was at the time, but, you know, this is what I used to do. So finally, my grandmother caught on. You know what I'm saying? So now I'm sitting in the back of the church, right, with my church clothes on.
And my
tennis shoes, though. But, you know, like, so, and I say that to get to the point that when I went to, when I would go on my recruiting trips, right, and I would go to football games, like I had already internalized the, you know, 1,000-yard thing, like the Tar Heel tailback. You know, like since I was ninth grade, I was all in on that. So I already knew what that was about. And then, you know, going and watching and again, no disrespect to the guys who were there before me, but thinking in my mind that, man, I'm gonna tear this thing up when I get here. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I'm gonna give that position what these guys want. Like, I'm gonna do it. So when I got there, I had some early success in camp, you know, running ball. Cause coming out of high school, you know, I was 230. You know, I was 230 coming out of high school. So, you know, I didn't have that, well, let's wait and put some weight on them kind of a deal. So, I ran with an aggressive style. Like, I was trying to punish guys. You know, Earl Campbell, that was my first introduction to football. Like, Earl Campbell, like Walter Payton, when I used to run the ball in Pop Warner. Well, not Pop Warner, it was Optimus Club is what I played. But I used to get unnecessary roughness penalties called on me when I'm running the ball. No, like literally, I used to get unnecessary roughness penalties called on me when I'm running the ball because I was running kids over. And, you know, because that was just – that's just what I knew, right, because that's just what I saw. And that's, like, always how I ran. You know, that's just, like, always how I ran. And when I got to maybe it was, like, ninth grade or so, I think it might have been Perry Freeze, Coach Freeze. Or it might have been Coach Queen. I can't remember. But, you know, I had a coach who was like, you know, just because you have the ball, you know, just because you're running with the ball doesn't mean you have to be the one that gets hit. You know, you're running with the ball, but you don't have to get hit. So, you know, it was like a mantle then, right? It was just like a mantra. So, you know, that was just me. That was just my, you know, that was just my style. So, you know, when I came in again, obviously I was having some success in camp, and there's the Bracy Walker story, and there's the Tommy Thigpen story. But yet still, I still couldn't break through and get on the field, right? I couldn't break through and get on the field. And I remember I got some cleanup reps. I can't remember, you know, Miami of Ohio. We went down to South Carolina, and I did some dumb stuff in South Carolina. Like, lost my playbook, and Coach Moody like got my playbook and handed it to me at the meeting. So I knew I wasn't gonna play that game. And then, you know, like, while we're out there getting smacked by South Carolina, I'm over there. I got caught not paying attention, looking at the girls in the stands, looking at the dance team, you know, doing everything. But I just couldn't get out of my own way. You know, it was like, you know, those things that you need to do to build trust with the coach, so he puts you in the game. And, you know, for some reason, I just couldn't get over that hump with Coach Moody. And then the week of the Wake Forest game, it was the week of the Wake Forest game, and he came in the meeting room, and he said, whoever has the best week of practice – it's gonna start. I said that in the back of the room. I sat up, and I didn't set up, but I said to myself then, I was like, I got him. I was like, I got him then, because I've never been afraid to work. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, I got him then. And you know, we came and we played Wake, and I had that game, and you know, we were rolling since then.
What is the Bracy Walker story and the Tommy Thigpen story?
Oh, so Bracy. Bracy, they called, you know, everybody talked about Bracy Walker. They called him Novocaine. Like, you know, Bracy was the big hitter in the secondary.
Yep.
You know, he was the big hitter. So he was the guy that, you know, everybody said, watch out for. And, you know, there's no doubt about it. He was laying cats out. I mean, he was like, wham, just taking cats out. But again, you know, Bracy, like Bracy would throw his body around. You know, Bracy was probably, you know, 195 pounds, but I mean, he'd throw his body around. Bracy played safety in the NFL for double digit years. Yep. So, I mean, you know, there's no doubt about it. He was a soldier. Bracy was a bad guy. But again, coming out of high school, I was 230. You know, I was 230. So that was kind of right up my alley, the way that he played. So I wasn't gonna be surprised by it. So, you know, I saw him taking some guys out. So, I already knew who he was. And he probably didn't know who I was, right? Because, you know, I'm just a freshman. So we're running outside zone or maybe a toss or something. And, you know, we should love to run tossing to the boundary. And we ran tossing to the boundary. And Bracy came, I mean, like he fielded like 100 miles an hour from safety. But I'm coming down here the other way and I'm 230. I mean, I just right through Bracy and didn't break stride. Just bam. And I was like, okay, yeah, I can play a little college ball. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, you know, I got through Bracy. And then we were doing a goal line run drill, where we had to, you know, the linebackers. I had to put heels on the five. No, I think the backers put their heels on the goal line. Tailbacks put their heels on the five-yard line. It was like a tough time drill, right? You know, there's no moves, like you go score. And, you know, Thig was kind of, you know, Thig was probably unaware, kind of like Bracy was, because, again, I'm just a freshman, right? So, you know, Thig comes up, and, you know, it's me against Thig Pig. And even then, like in college, Thig was like 210. You know, he's like 210, 205. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not – I haven't paid attention to Carolina defense, right? I ain't paid attention to that. So I don't know who Tommy Thigpen is. I'm not aware of, you know, Tommy's had this great freshman year and, you know, he's the guy on defense. So I'm not, you know, all I see is, you know, he's 210, he needs a little bit more lead than that pencil. You know what I'm saying? So we're on the, you know, I'm on the five, he's on the goal line, and we blow the whistle. And again, I think Tommy underestimated and didn't think, you know, anything about it. And man, I just smacked Tommy and he got pissed. He got pissed. He wouldn't get off the line. He was so pissed. And Randy Jordan was after me. And Thig wouldn't move. So Randy had to go next. He hit Randy and knocked Randy out for the year. Knocked Randy so down. Randy was done. Randy blames me all the time. Randy blames me all the time for getting Thigpen pissed off at him. And then Thigpen blew his shoulder out. Yeah. Yeah.
Adam and I don't even remember when this was, but we were talking about particularly your freshman year. There were points where it felt like the offensive playbook was toss sweep to Natron. I can't get out of my head. Yeah. To the right and then to the left and just keep going. And they knew it was coming, but it wasn't like they could stop it. Are we glorifying that a little bit, or did you feel that way too?
You know what? Probably not my freshman year, you know, because your freshman year, right? You're just so – like full of energy, like I can do it all, like, and I'm probably sure, you know, there was some, I'm not exactly sure what my high carry game was. I think maybe that Duke game might have been like, I don't know if that was 38 carries.
It was over 30 for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, but like then, like at that point, I wasn't really thinking about it, right? You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, hey, I hadn't really played, you know, I didn't really start until the Wake Forest game, you know what I'm saying? So I really kind of felt like at the end of that year, you know what I'm saying, that I was really like kind of like just hitting my stride. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I really, at that point in time, the pitch count, right? The pitch count didn't really matter to me, right? It didn't really matter to me. But probably about, you know, when I got towards the end, you know, when I got towards the end, like, you know, like I remember about junior year, there was a three-game stretch in there where I had over 100 carries in three games. All right, it was a three-game stretch where I had over 100 carries in three games. And then now, you know what I'm saying, it's starting to get brutal to the point where, you know, where after games, you know, instead of, like, going out to party, you know what I'm saying, I have to go lay home. You have to go get on the couch, and I got to, like rest for, like, 3 or 4 hours and then go party. You know what I'm saying? You know, and then go party.
Those are crucial hours,
yeah,
though.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? And then go party. But, yeah, I mean, there were some times in college, man, where I felt like, damn, you know, like this hurts, you know. But, you know, like I said, 3-4 hours later, okay, now it's time to go party. But yeah, that pitch count did get up there a little bit.
The guys you named in your class, that would be a great class coming off of a 10-2 season to assemble that group.
I mean, and you got to think of the guys that I didn't mention, Tito Wooten, Mike Watkins. I mean, those are like all NFL guys.
So how in the world did Mack Brown convince that group to come play for that program at that time?
Playing time. You know, I mean, it was there, right? I mean, I would think, obviously not being in the room, right, when those conversations were going down. And, you know, I don't know if those guys, again, were as easy as a sale as I was. As easy in the sale as I was. Mm-hmm. But I would say what you would, you know, obviously have to offer would be, you know, playing for your state school. You know, playing for your state. You know, playing for your state. And other than, you know, the camaraderie that was built, you know, while we were out on the circuit. I mean, because we were all working each other. Like, I remember trying to get Hitch and trying to get other guys like Dwayne Washington. You know, we lost Dwayne to NC State, but Bernardo and I were, like, always in contact. Like, I'd, by the time like that I actually saw Bernardo, like, we had talked on the phone, like, you know, it was just crazy. I don't, you know, like, I had no idea how I ended up on the phone talking to Bernardo. And, you know, and then lo and behold, I'm like somewhere playing basketball in like an AAU tournament. And then, you know, I get to meet Bernardo. And then, like, you know, with myself and Jimmy and Mike Morton, you know, we're all in the county. Again, I'm working trying to get Jimmy and Mike, and Mike's smarter than all of us. So, you know, he's a Moorhead guy. So, you know, now we're trying to get Hitch, and, you know, it was just crazy. It was, had to be one of those moon and stars aligning kind of deals. But, you know, it was a great get.
People also need to appreciate it. You weren't just texting those guys.
No,
you had to, like,
all.
Call them on the telephone,
oh,
like,
yeah.
For real.
Landline. Yeah, face-to-face contact. Yeah.
What was the scouting report on Natron Means, AAU basketball player?
He was going to hey, listen. He was a defensive stopper, right? He was the defensive stopper. He was going to hit the boards hard. He's an athlete. We used to get out and run. Right, athlete. Jump shot was suspect. Suspect jump shot. Hustle guy. And watch out, because he's going to try and dunk everything. I'm going to try and dunk everything. Every chance I got, I try to dunk the ball.
Oh, man. When I think of you in the pros, I know you play for multiple teams. I always think of San Diego. I think of the Chargers. Think of that Super Bowl run. What are some of your favorite memories from that part of your life? And what are some things that you look back on there?
Those are some of the best years of my life. I remember Coach Brown told me that the Chargers had that like the Chargers liked me, or, you know, something to that effect. And I remember when he, like, I had never ever given, like, San Diego a thought.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't even think I'd ever watched a San Diego game. I think I seen a highlight or something, like Gil Bird intercepting Dan Marino, some kind of, like, weird sports fact, right? So I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I went out and drafted by the Chargers. But, you know, obviously once I got there, I was fortunate enough to land in a room with a great group of guys, Marion Butts, Ronnie Harmon, Eric Bieniemy, mm-hmm. you know, were guys who, quote-unquote, raised me the right way in terms of how you go about the work when you're in between the lines. It took a while for the stuff they were trying to pour into me for outside the line to take hold. You know, I would be the first to admit that. But, you know, I was fortunate enough to come into a good group of guys, man, who showed me how to do it the right way. And that was something that I couldn't be more thankful for. Eric Bieniemy is probably one of the few guys, you know, that I am still in contact with, that I do lean on. I consider him a good friend of mine.
As far as playing the game, you talked about the transition from high school to college.
Mm-hmm.
What was the transition like from college to the pros?
Okay, so I used to have I still have this working theory, right, about how college is all about making you a man, and, well, the NFL is about proving you a man. So I remember my first mini camp, and I'm sitting there, and I'm watching, you know, waiting on my turn to get some reps, and we're running the inside zone, and, you know, I'm watching Marion Butts. He takes the handoff, wham, he flies through there. I'm like, all right. You know, I'm watching the next guy, wham, he gets through there. It's like, all right, man. All right, so it's my turn. So I go up, get in my stance, quarterback calls the cadence, bam, I take off, I see the hole, and, like, as soon as I see it, and I'm thinking I'm about to get through it, and then, like, boom, it just closes, and everybody, I stop, I just froze, I'm like, oh, shit. and Sly Crooms, you know, Sly Crooms, Sly Crooms was my coach at the time, and he just went crazy. Oh, man, he just let me have it, because I just froze, right? I just froze. So it took me, it took me exactly one rep to get used to the speed, right? To get used to the speed. So after that, you know, it was just, you got to trust it, and because it ain't going to be there long, and any kind of hesitation, 9 times out of 10, you ain't going to get it done. So it just really learning to play fast and to turn it free, because that's the only way that you're going to make it. You know, obviously there's so much information that's getting thrown around, right? And you know, you have to know your assignments, you have to know your responsibilities, but you have to be able to not only process but apply. So being able to operate that fast, when I was in Chapel Hill, I felt like I didn't have to operate that fast, and when I was operating that fast, I wasn't thinking at the same time. You know, I wasn't thinking at the same time. So I would probably say that was probably the biggest difference, right, is that process to application, right? Process to application was the biggest, because it happened so fast. God, it's just so much faster. I mean, you know, we've been playing football since we were in the backyard, right? And that part doesn't change. It's still the same game. But, man, the speed of it is what surprised me the most. Seeing those big – and it's not necessarily the back-end guys, right? It's not necessarily the back-end guys. Like, man, you see – big 330-pound guys in that 20-yard, in that 10 to 10-yard, man, you got a money. I'm telling you, if you really put on some tape and like watch that, if you just watch the bigs in a 20-yard window and you watch those big guys move, man, you like, ain't no way in the world. Yeah.
When we talk to Carolina players who have gone on to play professionally, no matter what sport it is.
Yeah.
One of the very first things they say that is the biggest adjustment is how much free time they have. What did you learn about the best way to handle that free time as you were making that adjustment to the pros?
The best way to handle the free time? I mean, you're talking to the wrong guy.
That's why I'm asking you.
You are talking to the wrong
guy. Well, I asked what you learned, not the mistakes you made with it.
Let me see. What's the best thing I learned? What's the best thing I learned? You know, I would probably say the best thing I learned about free time would probably be to just spend as much time at the facility as you can. You know, just spend as much time at the facility as you can. Because really, outside of that, you're opening yourself up to a lot. You know, you're opening yourself up to a lot. I mean, that's the one place, right, you would think that, hey, you know, I'm good here. It's about work. It's not about, you know, any external forces. That would be the piece of advice that I would give any young guy going to the NFL. Spend as much time at that facility as you can.
I think it was Chris Berman who gave you the Natron Means Business.
Yeah.
Did you hate that or did you like that?
Well, that, you know, it took some adjusting. Because here's what it was. It was actually refried. Refried, like the original nickname was Refried, and I always thought like Eric Bieniemy, you know, he was sleeping with Bieniemy. I was like, that's cool, man. So I just wanted me, you know, I'm in the room with Eric sleeping with Bieniemy. Like, I want me a nickname, right? So I don't know. We played somebody like the week before, and Berman did like the Refried Means. I was like, oh my god, that's terrible. Refried Means, like, I'm like, that's all I get, bro. So we were playing the Chiefs, and Chris Mortensen was coming in. You know, you used to do the pregame or the day before, where you sit down with the TV guys and, you know, they ask you questions about the game and stuff. And Mortensen was kind of doing this thing, and I was like, hey man, you think we can get something better than Refried? I mean, can you pass that along for me? I mean, can we do better than Refried? So I asked him that, and then no lie, we were doing we beat the Chiefs, and I had a good game. And the next night, well, that night on Countdown, it's when he dropped the Means Business. We're done with Refried. Yeah, we're done with Refried. Yeah, we're done with Refried. I was like, thank you.
Sometimes you just got to put your foot down.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to take this anymore.
Or you can ask Chris Mortensen.
When you heard him say the Means Business, were you like, I did that?
No.
I made him make that check.
No, not at all. I was like, that's a lot better. That's all I thought. Man, that sounds so much better. Yeah.
You mentioned your daughter, soccer, Carolina, that your son is a Tar Heel, or you're raising him that way. What is it like from that perspective now, seeing them – go through some stuff that you went through as a young athlete?
You know, so my approach has been to just sit back and just let it happen to them. I mean, like, honestly, that's just kind of like, I feel like the best way that I can do it, because like early on with my daughter in soccer, I was a little vocal at the soccer game. Got a couple looks. I think I got shown the exit one game. So, you know.
I want to meet the guy who tries to kick Nate out of the the youth soccer game.
Hey, I am refried meat. You're not kicking me out of here.
Listen, he did it. He did it from the other side of the field.
Yeah, that's where I do it, too.
Yeah, he did it. He did it from the other side of the field. But in all fairness, I would like to say it was my wife's fault. But I'm going to keep going. So, with my kids, man, in their athletic conquest, I just really try and sit back and just kind of let their journey be theirs. I'll try and give my daughter some tidbits because she is, she competes at a high level. And I think that right now she would probably be the one of my kids who would probably benefit the most from what it is that I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
My son right now, I mean, he's 12. You know, it can kind of go either way. You know what I'm saying? He's still kind of trying to find himself. He's a good athlete. So I just try and sit back and try not to ruin his athletic experience. You know what I'm saying? So I just sit back. And, you know, no matter how bad it bothers me that he can shrug off those L's, I just sit back and I just let him shrug them off. You know, that's his sports life. Yeah.
Who is somebody you did not want to see lining up on the other side? You would have never told him at the time, but as you sit here now, you know when you saw this guy, you're like, oh, not that guy.
Like, that's like one of the – like, for real, like, I think that's – because I can't. I just can't give anybody that credit. I can't. Like, honestly, so I think I like to do it better like this, right? So, you know, there's never really one guy. Right, there's never really one guy that you say, like, I don't want to line up against that one guy. So for me, it's always been about, like, defenses, right? Like, you know, you always play, like, tough defenses. You know, like Baltimore, and you know, Baltimore, Young, Ray Lewis. Like, I played against those guys. You know, like, that was a tough defense. Like, old school Cleveland Browns, like, you know, those were tough defenses. Like, the Eagles and, you know, with Reggie White and those guys, those were just, like, tough defenses. It's hard for me to give it to a guy, but I will tell you who was probably the meanest guy. The meanest guy that I probably played against was Greg Townsend.
Hmm.
Greg Townsend, defensive end for the Raiders. And I remember we used to, when I was coming out of college, we never chip blocked, right? You know, when the defensive line's rushing, he's not paying you any attention, right? So running backs, the way that you kind of get back is you chip block him. So you act like you're going to go and release on the route. So he's not paying you any attention. He's just focused on the tackle who he's trying to beat. And then you just kind of lean back into him and shoot him an elbow, right? So he called it chip blocking. Defensive ends hate chip blocks. So it was my rookie year, and Ronnie Harmon, he was like the master of the chip block. Like, man, I've seen him chip block guys, and like the first thing that hits the ground is the back of the guy's head. I mean, like he had it down to a science, right? So I was like, man, I got to get me one of those. So we were playing the Raiders. I was a rookie, and Greg Townsend. I was like, oh, I'm gonna get him. So I guess I must have gave it away or something, because I skipped out like I was gonna release on my route. And as soon as I went to turn back into him, he just made a beeline for me. He just came right at me. He just hit me. Bam! He picked me up and he threw me out and he just stood over it. And like, I'm telling you, for the 10 seconds of the play call, he just cussed me out, told me, a rookie, don't you ever try and chip block me. I was like, yes, sir, Mr. Townsend. Yes, sir, Mr. Townsend. That'll never happen again. Yeah, that'll never happen again. So Greg Townsend, he was a mean man. He was a mean man.
All right, we'll get out of here with this. How much, being just down the road, how much do you follow Carolina? I mean, even in an earlier answer, you said we and us when you were talking about the Tar Heels. How much do you follow the Tar Heels even now?
Oh, man, I'm in. I'm on. We're all in. There's only one sports team in our house. We're blue bellies in my house. That's what we call them. We're blue bellies. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I follow, you know, I follow as much as I can. Obviously, you know, coaching here, my Saturdays, I don't get a chance to see much football. So, you know, between the print, or, you know, if we're playing a later game or they're playing an earlier game, or, you know, towards the end of the season, I think we tend to finish up when the Heels have a few games left. So, you know, we obviously follow as much as I can there. Basketball is basketball, right? You know, we're watching as much as we can. And, you know, we'll even, since my daughter committed there to play soccer, so we'll make it up to some soccer games as well. So we are, we're all in, man.
Man, we had a lot of fun talking to Natron. Hope you enjoyed listening to it. That interview brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. Did you know texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds? And at highway speeds, that's like driving the length of an entire football field with your eyes closed. The trusted choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. Don't text and drive. Go to trustedchoice.com/goheels. Find an independent insurance agent near you to learn more. So with that in mind, we go to the 5-second challenge. Adam is the question asker this week. I am the question answerer. Adam will give me either a question that has a straight answer that I'll have 5 seconds to get, or a question that has some kind of list of answers, and I'll try to get as many of them as I can in a scant 5 seconds, which, as we have learned on the 5-second challenge, goes faster than you think it might.
I am 100% confident you will get everyone on this list.
Oh.
You will only be constrained by time.
Oh, boy. Now that's a lot of pressure.
I know it.
Okay.
I know it. That's how confident I am.
All right.
Okay. You're going to have 5 seconds, Jones, to answer this question.
I'm nervous.
9 different players have caught a pass for the Tar Heels this year.
Okay.
Your 5 seconds begins now.
Daz Newsome, De'Ami Brown, Carl Tucker, Bo Corrales, Michael Carter, Javonte Williams.
Stop.
I got six.
You got six. That's good.
That's pretty good.
That's the record for, like,
yes!
For quantity in 5 seconds, right?
I think so.
I think the most we had gotten was five.
Four or five, yeah.
Yeah, and you got six. That's more than one per second.
Okay, now, so who did I miss? I got six.
I don't necessarily know who you named.
All right. I didn't say Toe Groves.
Yep.
He's on there. Hold on. Don't tell me. Sam Howe.
Right. That's the tricky one.
Because he caught the double pass.
That's the tricky
from
one.
From De'Ami Brown. So that's 8. And hold on. Don't tell me. Let's see. Who am I missing here? Who am I missing here, Adam?
I'm not sure who you've said.
Okay. Okay. Just listen and I'll see who I missed.
You said Daz Newsome.
Yeah, of course.
You said De'Ami Brown.
Yes.
You said Michael Carter.
Yes.
You said Bo Corrales.
Yes.
Did you say Antoine?
Ah, that's who I missed. Antoine Green.
Yeah.
Antoine Green's the other one I missed.
Toe Groves, Sam Howell, Carl Tucker, Javonte Williams.
Yeah. And I do think that that's one thing that has been positive for Carolina offensively is that they haven't just needed one guy to be good, and they have been able to spread the ball around. I mean, Carl Tucker had a huge – that he only has the one catch, but it was a huge catch in the last game on a third down, kept the drive going that I think the Tar Heels kicked a field goal on against Miami. So a lot of different guys stepping up. And I think it's fair to say, Adam, you and I talked about this some, that receiver core, you felt like it was talented, but you needed to see it start to produce more consistently on the field. And I think through 2 weeks that you've seen that Sam Howell has different options in that pass game that he feels good about. I think eventually there's a chance you could see Emory Simmons, a true freshman, Choffrey Brown, who's De'Ami Brown's brother, a true freshman. I think you could see him as well. Welton Spotsville, who's is a freshman who is eventually going to get in that mix in time, too. And you have some older guys like Corey Bell Jr. And Roscoe Johnson that could help you, too. So I think you'll see some more guys, but they have found a nice core that have stepped up on game day.
Not only name the 9, then you name the next 9.
Yeah, that's right. Just working on my boards, Adam. I felt bad after I butchered Obi Igbuna's name earlier. I needed to make up for it.
I do know the players on the team, and here they are.
All right, before we get going with Adam's list.
Yes.
Plus, we have – are we going to do story time today? Oh, and we got the basketball schedule. We're going to do that first, and then we'll get to the list. So before we get to the basketball schedule, I have to ask you another question, Adam.
Okay.
Do you know any Tar Heel fans that work selflessly to improve the lives of others and in their communities?
No.
Well – LS Tractor wants to know about these folks that you may know that Adam doesn't. Adam's very shut in. He doesn't know many other people. LS Tractor and the Tar Heels have partnered up to recognize hometown heroes from throughout the state. You can visit GoHeels.com/hero, GoHeels.com/hero, to nominate someone you know for a chance to be recognized on court at an upcoming Carolina basketball game. LS Tractor, proud partner of Carolina Athletics. By the way, Adam.
I need a hero.
The other day when I was looking up these songs about heroes, two things about the videos. One, Mariah Carey's video for Hero was just her singing it in a concert.
Yeah. Well, she's Mariah Carey.
That used to be kind of a regular thing, right?
Well, there was that. But remember, there were also the videos where you were in the studio,
and
you were wearing the headphones, and like you'd have to push the headphones against your ears as you sang.
To be with you, I just feel like that song was one of Mr. Big.
I'm the one who wants to be with you.
I'm the one.
Even
Felt like that was one like that. It may not have been.
Deep. Oh, it totally was. They were all sitting around and, you know, just jamming in the studio. And then this randomly decided they would make a video.
Yeah.
It wasn't planned.
Extreme.
It was impromptu.
More than words.
That was just the two guys sitting on the stools.
Hey, we're just here jamming.
That's totally stripped down.
And then the Enrique Iglesias hero. Adam, I got to tell you, a little steamy.
Really?
Video.
I don't remember
Felt a little questionable playing it at my desk at work when I was trying to capture the song. I was like, ugh.
What are you doing, Joseph? I'm just working on my boards. I'm not watching Enrique Iglesias, if you were wondering.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. I'm watching Enrique Iglesias. Okay. Adam. The basketball schedule is out.
Yes.
And it's a challenging schedule for the Tar Heels.
Yes.
Still a lot of uncertainty as far as when the Tar Heels will play and how you can follow them outside of either being at the game or, of course, listening to the Tar Heel Sports Network. But we do have a list of teams in order that the Tar Heels will play.
Here's the schedule. Kind of.
Yeah.
That's getting suspiciously close to football land, but I guess that's the world we live in. I also guess if you don't have the ACC network, you might want to start giving serious thought to how you are going to watch these games. Carolina's first four, I believe, conference games are on the ACC network, including the first two, the season opener, of course, the traditional season opening conference game against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And then the December road trip to Charlottesville, that one's on the ACC network. And then two games in January on the ACC network, Georgia Tech and Pitt, before the Tar Heels ever play on any network other than that. So if you don't have it, and I'm just going to tell you that my sneaking suspicion is some of these network TBAs are also going to be the ACC network. You need to get the ACC network in some way, legally.
Well, I think that the ACC network has made it very clear that they are going to lean heavily on basketball, which makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, ACC football is, as we have discussed, it has grown tremendously. I think it's a big reason why the network is able to be successful and was able to launch the way that they wanted it to launch and has been in the amount of homes that they want. I know they still want more. But I think that they are leaning heavily on the schedule was announced on the ACC network. And so it is they are leaning heavily on basketball, and I would expect – I don't know Duke's schedule by heart, but I'm guessing they're on the ACC network a fair amount as well, and they're going to lean into that to try to make sure that the network gets as much traction as they can. As far as the Tar Heels are concerned, Adam, I mean, it's just it's hard. I mean, it's a tough schedule. And, you know, in the ACC, Carolina plays Notre Dame twice. They play Virginia twice. And now you're going to start playing more teams twice also because you've gone to 20 games now in the league. So you have the opportunity. Carolina does play Wake Forest twice. They play Duke and State twice, as they have for a while. They play Pitt twice in three games. So they play Pitt on Wednesday, January 8th, then play Clemson on Saturday, the 11th, and then play Pitt again the next Saturday. So that's weird. The Tar Heels have a couple of those Saturday to Monday turnarounds.
Three
of them in conference play. All three, they go on the road for the second half of the Saturday-Monday, which I think is always harder to be the road team on the second half of the Saturday-Monday, and two of those three are longer trips for Carolina. The Tar Heels are fortunate in their location that some of their road trips and conference games are close by, but these are not. At Florida State and at Notre Dame, two of the longer trips that Carolina can make. There is a stretch in mid-January of three road games out of four where it's at Pitt, at Virginia Tech, Miami at home, then at State. That happens again in mid-February when the Tar Heels go at Wake, Virginia at home, at Notre Dame, at Louisville. So just a tough schedule with good teams, as you would expect in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And when you're playing 20 conference games, you're going to see good teams repeatedly, and that's what you got.
the Saturday, Monday, those three Saturday Mondays are in a span of 4 weeks. So in some ways, I guess that's good because you're getting long weeks to prepare for the Saturdays. But in some ways, that's bad because let's say there's some injuries or something at that time of year, which there may be. You're having to do that very quickly. So that's going to be a challenge.
It's going to be a challenge to pot after dark after a road trip to Florida State.
Yes.
Don't think that's going to happen, Adam.
Coach Williams, we're going to need complete silence on this plane. We need to do the pod. Cole Anthony, you hold it down up there, you youngster, young scamp. Something I like about this schedule, both Duke games on a Saturday.
Yeah, that's – I can't remember the last time that happened.
1991.
You looked it up.
I looked it up.
Nice.
And I don't know why it happened in 1991 because it didn't happen the year before that. So just some random thing, possibly like this. But I think the first Duke game belongs the weekend after the Super Bowl, which is when this one is, Saturday, February 8th at the Smith Center.
Well, and there's at least a little separation between the Duke games this year.
Yeah, it's spread out
a month apart instead of like 2 weeks apart, which is what it was, it felt like last year.
I think that's better.
Yes.
And in return, the Tar Heels will play Pittsburgh twice in a week, almost. But also play Notre Dame once and then not play them for 3.5 months and then play them again. Like a typical conference foe.
That's weird.
Definitely backloaded again. Carolina's first few ACC games. I'm just going to ignore Notre Dame and Virginia because that's not really in the real part of the conference season. Georgia Tech, Pittsburgh, Clemson, Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech, Miami. But then you get into February and you start going at Florida State, Duke, Wake Forest, Virginia, Notre Dame, Louisville, State, Syracuse, Wake Forest, Duke. That's a little tougher.
Yep.
So the back half's a little tougher than the front half, but people have gotten used to that. That's for TV purposes, and that's probably how it's going to be forever.
Four of Carolina's first five conference games are at home, even though they're all spread out. Wednesday, November 6th at home against Notre Dame, then Saturday, December 7th at Virginia, but then Georgia Tech, Pitt, Clemson in the span of a week, all three games at home. Saturday, the 4th of January, Wednesday, the 8th of January, Saturday, the 11th of January. But the Heels pay for it later, of course. Four of their final six games are on the road, and they are not in easy places. At Notre Dame, at Louisville, at Syracuse, at Duke. Those are four of Carolina's final six games, so that'll be a challenge to be sure. Non-conference-wise, the non-conference schedule is so small now.
Can I tell you, was kind of say one other thing about the conference schedule?
Oh, yeah, of course.
I think when you're trying to analyze the league, something you always have to look at is who are your one-time-only opponents who you have to play on the road. Carolina got a little break there last year. That break is over. Carolina goes to Virginia Tech. That's a tough place to play, no matter how good the Hokies are. They go to Florida State. We know what can happen there.
Dokies!
They go to Louisville, probably going to be one of the top 10 teams in the country, everyone seems to think, and they go to Syracuse. That's your four one-time road games.
Yep.
That's about as tough as it gets when you know you're going to play Duke home and home.
And Virginia home and home.
And Virginia home and home. So I think if you had to pick the four you wouldn't want to play, you might pick those four.
Yeah.
In terms of just one-shot road games. Okay, sorry, non-conference schedule.
No, yeah. So, I mean, it's so odd. They're just not that many anymore. I mean, Carolina starts off its first non-conference game is very quickly after its first game. They play Wednesday the 6th against Notre Dame, and then they are at UNCW. So on the road, of course, C.B. McGrath, former Tar Heel assistant, former pod guest, head coach of Wilmington. That'll be a challenge just because it's a quick turnaround and Carolina never goes to Wilmington. So they'll be on fire down there when Carolina gets there. Gardner Webb at home on the 15th, Elon at home as part of the battle for Atlantis on the 20th. Then Carolina goes down to the Bahamas and plays those three games where you know they'll play Alabama. Then they'll play either Iowa State or Michigan, both good teams. And then they'll finish up with somebody from the other half, Gonzaga, Oregon, Seton Hall, or Southern Miss. Tar Heels then return home for ACC Big Ten Challenge play December 4th against Ohio State. And at that point, they only have four more non-conference games. They have the game at Virginia on December 7th. Then there's the game in Carmichael on December 15th against Wofford. There's so many crazy parts about this schedule. Then the Tar Heels are leaving, I think, the next day, Monday the 16th, to fly out to Spokane, Washington,
where they'll play Gonzaga on Wednesday the 18th, then going straight from there to Las Vegas, where they play UCLA on Saturday at 3 o'clock. Then they have a game against Yale on December 30th, right before the new year. And then after that, it's nothing but conference games from that point on. So it is going to be fun, as always, to be with the Tar Heels, but they will be challenged, as they always are, for sure.
Yes, this is a difficult schedule. And we knew the non-conference part was already difficult. We assumed the conference part would probably be difficult. It is going to be. So we'll see.
Don't forget, also, Tar Heels have their exhibition game against Winston-Salem State. Don't think Natron can, although he said he played AAU ball. Maybe he can sign up. That's Friday, November the 1st at 7:30. So that will be, I think Carolina's at home in football the next day, I think. So not sure how, honestly, haven't had enough time yet to juxtapose this with the football schedule to see how it all works out, but it's going to be a busy, busy November as always.
Tar Heels against Virginia the next day on November 2nd. That could be a big weekend in Chapel Hill.
Big weekend. So, Adam, anything else schedule-wise other than it's going to be hard?
I always like putting the schedule on the calendar. It's like life has become real when you can write in all your TBAs and slide them in there on the right day and know what's going to happen, and you immediately think you can figure out what's going to happen, but really it'll be completely opposite from that. So looking forward to doing that.
Man, hard to believe basketball's almost here.
Yeah.
And especially with football going how it is, everybody's so engrossed in football right now, as you should be at this time of season. But late night's on the 27th, and the first game, real game, is November 6th with that exhibition just a week before that. So it's coming. Almost here. Adam, what else you got?
I've got a list. I've got a vacation for life. Vacation from life. What did I say? I feel like we should do a how can you justify that, because if we don't, I feel like people are going to give us a how can you justify that. We've done the 5-second challenge, and of course I've got my champion to keep your eyes on.
Why don't we go to our UNC Healthcare Champion of the Week, and it's our Champion Watch brought to you by UNC Healthcare. Team at UNC Healthcare is dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds, you and your family included. See their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. This is where, Adam, on early in the week, we pick our champions from the gridiron. Later in the week, we pick a champion team to watch this weekend outside of Tar Heel football or basketball. So, Adam, what champion Tar Heels do you have your eyes on this weekend?
I'm watching men's soccer.
We got you, Carlos Somuano.
ACC opener tonight at Virginia Tech.
Ooh.
It's on the ACC Network Extra, which you may or may not be able to stream on your computer device.
Yeah.
That's the ACC opener. Men's soccer is 2-1-1. They just had a clean sheet.
Nice.
Against UNC Greensboro, a 1-0 victory.
Yep.
For Gaffer Samuano and his charges. So men's soccer night, ACC opener. Seems early for a conference battle on the pitch, but it's never too early.
How about your list, sir?
All right.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Denoris Searcy.
Yes.
Big gift to the Rams Club and the football program.
Yeah.
And they have named the defensive backs meeting room after Denoris. Rude boys.
Well, you know, we talked about Denoris when we did our Mac to Mac teams. Mm-hmm. I think he's somebody not the first name that comes to your mind, but a really good player who's gone on to have a terrific career at the pro level.
And that's awesome that he did that for the Rams Club. And great to see former players getting even more involved.
Oh, heck yeah.
We've talked about that family feeling on the football side and stuff like that only makes it even more meaningful. Speaking of the Rams Club, they're giving away tickets to the Clemson game. Carolina Clemson, that could be a big one, folks. You need to go to their social media channels, the Rams Club, on Twitter and Instagram to learn how you can enter. I'm going to guess you're probably going to need to join the Rams Club, which really, you should do that already anyway. So go to their social media avenues to learn how you can win 4 tickets to the Carolina Clemson game.
Mm.
Melissa, she's told us, Hampy. She sent us a good link. If this was a Little Sebastian list, it would be even more appropriate. But a service horse flew on a commercial airline flight.
Mm.
A woman boards flight with her service animal, a miniature horse. A Bria Hensley, who has post-traumatic stress disorder, takes Flirty, her miniature horse,
Flirty,
everywhere she goes. And there's a picture which really puts it over the top, because the tiny horse is just standing in line at the ticket counter. Like, it's like when Sebastian the Ibis puts his hand on his mascot head, except this is like little giant horse. Just, I'm just waiting to check it back.
Miniature horses are hilarious to look at. It's like, you're a regular horse, but you're small.
Amberly Babbage had a big reaction when she spotted a miniature horse checking in at O'Hare Airport. I did a double take, she said. At first, I thought it was a really large dog. She was so calm, just standing there. Passengers and crew on the flight to Omaha, so Chicago to Omaha, were just as intrigued by the 135-pound service animal named Flirty. Even the pilots had to come out and say hi, Flirty's owner wrote on Instagram. Hensley is allergic to dogs and has post-traumatic stress disorder, takes Flirty everywhere she goes. The 7-year-old mare reminds Hensley to take her medication and provides support when she becomes overwhelmed. I had no idea that this happened, but evidently it does. And there's a picture of the crew with Flirty. Right there. Right there.
Flirty.
Flirty. Flirty's just out doing good in the world. Okay. Jones.
Yes.
I've got something for you, buddy. It's time for some Hallmark Christmas movie Mad Libs.
Oh, boy.
The full schedule has been released for upcoming Hallmark Christmas movies. Robert Santiago tweeted at us the full list, and I've pulled 3 that sounded especially lovely.
Okay.
And I'd like you to fill in some blanks.
Okay.
The first one is called Christmas Wishes and Mistletoe Kisses. And it premieres, as most Christmas things do, on October 26th.
Yeah, right.
The movie centers around Abby, a
ad executive,
single mom, who takes a risk in following her true passion of...
What? That's a shocker. Owning her own business.
Close. Partial credit. Interior designing.
Yeah.
Okay. She is hired by a local businessman.
Of course.
Nick.
Yes, she is.
To
design his parents' storefront.
Decorate his estate by Christmas Eve.
She's against the clock.
Those reindeer hooves are up on the roof. And she's putting the last strand of garland up. With the deadline in sight, Abby must navigate her working relationship with Nick in hopes that this is...
true love.
Just the start to a successful new career. Movie number 2, Merry and Bright. Set your DVRs for November 2nd, a little later on the calendar. This one's got a couple big stars. Jodie Sweetin.
Wow.
From Full House.
Yeah.
Not... Candace Cameron.
No.
But the other one.
How rude.
Yeah, how
Wait,
rude.
Wait, no, that was the baby that said that. Never mind.
I think Jodie Sweetin probably said it from time to time. And I believe this is right, UNC grad Sharon Lawrence.
Yeah. Nice.
We need to get her on the pod.
Yeah.
The story begins when Kate, CEO of...
an advertising company.
The Merry and Bright Candy Cane Company.
Mm, they probably advertise too.
Meets Gabe during the busy Christmas season. She assumes Gabe is...
married.
The suitor her well-meaning mother is trying to set her up with. When in reality, he...
is an elf. A Christmas elf. Santa's elf.
Works for Empire Corporate Recovery, which has been hired to take a closer look at Merry and Bright's operation.
They want to take it over.
And find ways to make the company
More efficient.
More profitable.
Yeah.
Yeah. As Kate and Gabe begin to work together, they find ways to...
to save Christmas and fall in love.
Elevate the business and find that they have more in common than...
meets the eye.
Savvy business sense. Movie number three, the last one for today's Christmas movie Mad Libs, The Christmas Club. Premieres Sunday, November 17th. It's getting late in the Christmas calendar.
You can only watch it for six straight weeks.
I don't know these people, Cameron Matheson and Elizabeth Mitchell.
I'm sure they're going places.
Two busy strangers, Olivia Bennett, we're getting full names, and Edward Taylor, meet when...
Edward came to check on Olivia's business.
No. They help an elderly woman find her...
Christmas spirit.
Lost Christmas savings. Lost Christmas savings is what we were looking for. Thanks to fate and...
Santa Claus.
Full credit. Christmas magic.
Yeah.
They also find something they were both missing.
Love.
So thank you, Robert Santiago, for giving us the heads up.
Yep.
The full list of, I think it's 40 new Hallmark Christmas movies this year. You can find that on the internet, I'm sure. And I'm sure we'll also be going through some others. Not all the full descriptions are out yet because you can't release these plot points.
Yeah, sure.
And run the risk that someone duplicates you.
Yeah.
Because these are all supposed to be unique.
Yeah.
So they have to keep those a secret. I thought this was interesting. There's another team. You know, a long time ago when Carolina wasn't as proficient at football,
sure,
a lot of times the Tar Heels would have to play at noon.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we would get grouchy about that.
Yeah.
There's another team that's mad that they're having to play all these day games. Do you know who it is?
Alabama.
That's exactly right. How'd you know that?
I saw this story.
Oh, well, then never mind. So Alabama's all mad that they're having to play during the day.
I like how they put out. I like how they put out a release talking, like showing their disappointment.
Yeah, but I bet you their next game's at night.
Oh, come on.
And Nick Saban, he scolded the Alabama fans for leaving on the game day last time. But once he got a talking to, it sounds like, and someone told him it was hot, which he did not realize. I don't think he came back and said he appreciated everyone who was there, and if they left early because it was hot, he understood. And then he ripped up a statement, threw it down, said he didn't believe it. He didn't do that last
Then he said he was going back to his small hometown and he was going to help out with a little Christmas store.
I don't know if you know, but I was a coal miner. So not just Carolina, Alabama getting tired of the day games. I think it's going to be interesting to see. They put out the statement saying they didn't like the daytime games.
Is that
what effect will that
is
have?
Is that all it takes? Because I'll go ahead and put one out, too.
Yeah.
I'll just make a statement from Bubba. I don't think he'd mind if I just wrote it.
Dateline, Jones. The Tar Heels today said they do not like playing at noon. Please have all games be at 8 o'clock against Miami. Thank you. So I've got a vacation from life. I'm sure you saw this story because it was an awesome story. This vacation from life goes out to the University of Tennessee.
This was a great story, and big props to Tennessee for doing this.
It seems like everyone involved, other than those jerk kids who started it, hit this one exactly right. What happened was a kid in Florida, it was College Colors Day, and a kid in Florida was a Tennessee fan, but he didn't have a Tennessee shirt from the store, so he made his own Tennessee shirt. Hand drawn.
Yeah.
And I guess he was made fun of by some of the kids in his class.
Kids are the worst.
A lot of times kids are mean.
They're the worst.
And so the teacher put something on Facebook or something about it and I guess said, oh, gee, that's too bad that this kid in my class got made fun of. Well, the University of Tennessee saw this post and they then created a shirt off of this kid's design.
Yeah, it looked just like the one he made himself in his house.
And they sold it on their school, their version of GoHeels.com.
Right.
And sold 16,000 of them, crashed the website, and they're going to give the proceeds to an anti-bully organization. So it seems like everybody, I think the Tennessee president sent this kid a big package of Tennessee gear. So nice job by everyone. Again, other than the punk kids, involved in this one, because I think it all worked out exactly right, and everyone did something that makes you feel good.
Adam, I had one note to mention today, and it said Vols shirt kid.
Nice.
So we did it.
Yeah, vacation from life right there.
We have a story time. I'm going to hold on to it, though,
okay,
just because we've gone a little longer here on this pod. And so I'm going to hold on to the story time. We got a good one from Dusty Tompkins about his experience at the South Carolina game. And so I do want to read that one, but I want to hold it for next week, just because we've already gone a little longer here. And Tar Heels got a kick with the Deeks. And I know you need to focus in on the big non-conference matchup between Carolina and Wake Forest. Adam, anything else before we get out of here about Carolina Wake or anything else?
No.
Okay, I need to give you one really piece of bad news, Adam.
Okay.
It's almost a travesty, honestly. So we have our boy,
right,
Nate, saying, "See you later, Big Grits." And as you would expect, it's an awesome "See you later, Big Grits."
Sure.
However, for the first time ever, the computer did the brrr during the "See you later, Big Grits." So you're not going to get the full hilarity, but I think you'll still get the idea. You're still going to jovially leave this pod loving Natron Means, as you should.
How can you justify that, computer?
Yeah. Oh, you forgot the how can you justify that, too.
Yeah, well, yes.
I do not have to justify.
How can you
justify
what you've done?
Justify.
How can you possibly
justify that?
Many people sent us the article.
Yep.
Via Twitter, Instagram, email.
The official
pigeon
horse of the pod.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I believe these allegations.
That's not the justify.
That's not the justify we know and love and interviewed one time.
That's
here on
right.
The pod.
That's right. I forgot about that.
I feel like Justify would have told us.
Yeah.
If things were afoot.
Jones and Adam, I'd like to come clean. apparently, there's a rumor, allegedly,
yeah,
unconfirmed and highly suspicious,
yeah,
that Justify might have had a little something in his corn feed before that third leg of,
yeah,
the Triple Crown.
Excellence.
So, a lot of people say that Justify deserves a how can you justify that. I'm not willing to do that until we hear from Justify himself.
Yeah. How can the official horse of the pod ever go down that path? I don't believe that.
No. I mean, I think if this were to somehow be true, there would be a strong push to take his name out of the how can you justify that. You can never take his name out of the how can you justify that. He is that.
Yeah. He's part of it.
He is that. Everyone makes a mistake. And if this turns out to be true, it was probably one of those stupid humans just,
yeah,
gave him the wrong thing.
He didn't know what he was doing. He was just eating.
On top of that, he didn't even need it.
No.
He would have kicked butt in that race no matter what. I don't remember how much he won by, but I bet it was a lot.
A lot.
Many links.
We got your large, enormous back, Justify.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about that.
That's right. Don't let him tear you down. Haters gonna hate.
Yeah. We're equine experts. And you're our boy.
Yeah.
You and Natron Means. All right. We're going to let Natron get us out of here. Enjoy the game tonight. Again, 6 o'clock, Carolina Wake Forest. We're on the air at 5. We're back next week. Got more good guests. And big game coming up next week, too. Carolina Appalachian State in Keenan Stadium next Saturday. So let's let Natron get us out of here, along with the RZA, of course, on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Natron Means.
See you later, bigots.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it.
House full of brothers and sisters, the pops missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat greens for dinner.
See you later, Big Green.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.